This week on the show, the Red Sox take care of business. What's left to watch before the playoffs start? We're recording on a Sunday, so there's a lot we're going to miss. And Alex Lebowitz, his own hometown, in the news. He will share his experiences. All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. All right, welcome into the Calling It podcast. Sorry we're a little late on this week. Between I moved the Patriots. We had a holiday in there on Wednesday when we were hoping to record, but Lebowitz, we are nothing if not men of the people, so we wanted to get a show out this week. Little Sunday morning edition of Calling It, and a good Sunday morning to you, Mr. Lebowitz.
You as well. We're like the poor man's sports reporter. This is great.
I remember that show's not on anymore, is it?
Is it not? I never watched one.
That was like
Mike Lupica and like Bob Ryan and
what's his name? Who wrote Tuesdays with Maury?
I don't know.
Mitch Album.
Yep.
That was the boring half hour before Countdown started. Back when Countdown was good.
Yeah, your grandfather's favorite sports show.
Right. I mean, look, I'd probably enjoy it now, but when I was 13, I just wanted to see Chris Berman make sound effects.
I don't think I'd enjoy it now. They're boring. It's just like very pretentious sports talk. Ugh, that's not what it's supposed to be.
Throw like Shaughnessy on there.
Yes, get some negativity in there. Get someone who has a little bit of flavor, not Mike Lupica.
It was still better than Outside the Lines. That's the back-to-back I remember. And I was like, why am I watching documentaries right now?
Well, at least Outside the Lines was informative. It wasn't just like people whose opinion you didn't care about spewing their opinion. Like, and Bob Lee's funny. Like, he's just
he
a funny-looking guy.
He is.
Not intentionally, just the look of him. He's a funny-looking guy. I'm sorry. Anyway.
All right, anyway. If you want to insult Bob Lee, I guess that's how we're going to start the show. But I want to get into the Red Sox. They clinched this week, clinched the division from our math, which should not totally be trusted. But the Red Sox with, what did I say, 7 games left are 7.5 up on Houston, who has 8 games left. So the Red Sox can clinch the best record in baseball here in the next couple of days. They should do. Look, if they don't do that, huge problem. But I want to talk about the clinch before we talk about what's coming up here, because that series against the Yankees, it was huge that they clinched in that series, because I think if you get swept by the Yankees and you miss a chance to clinch directly, then you have to go on the road to Cleveland. That just, it reminds me too much of the year that they clinched the division on the walk-off grand slam. And then, remember, they're on the walk-off loss grand slam. They lost on a grand slam, but they clinched because somebody else won, and they had this awkward celebration, then they didn't win again. It reminded me of that. So it was good to see, although the team has struggled in September, and there's kind of back and forth, are they struggling because they're just done and they're waiting for the playoffs? Are they struggling because they're cold? Alex Cora got his team up for that game. They were down. They were behind. They came back big. They won. That game gives me hope that, okay, they've just sucked in September because they know that they're all set. They're not out there buzzing it because they want to be fresh for the playoffs. So I was very relieved that they clinched in the way that they did.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if they didn't get it done in that series, it would have been a big, big letdown for that team. And if you play that, the Yankees in the first round, it definitely would have been in the back of the minds of those players. So it's good thing that they won, especially in the fashion that they did. And we should acknowledge that they have been a great team in regard to coming back late in games. And that's kind of an it factor quality. They have it. The trouble is their bullpen. And that was a problem in that series. It's been a problem the entire season, especially the second half. So good thing they clinched the division. Seems like clinching the top spot in the MLB is inevitable at this point. But again, there is a huge hole on this team, and for that reason, I'm not completely buying in.
Yeah, so let's get into that now. Kind of what to expect here the last week. I won't lie, probably going to tune it out. Not that interesting. There are some pitching things which we'll get into, but you know, for the most part, wake me up when September ends, I guess, for lack of a better term. I've kind of been that way. Clinching the division helped, but yes, the bullpen to me, if I am going to focus on them here down the stretch, is issue number one. Who's going to step up? We saw Nathan Eovaldi's a name that's been thrown around. Stephen Wright has pitched well. There's the Ryan Brazier experiment. But to me, the storyline is more there are key guys who are pitching themselves off of the playoff roster, whether it be a guy like Drew Pomeranz, whether it be a guy like Joe Kelly. Those are guys who are supposed to be staples. And look, well, I'm fine with those guys not making the playoff roster. I'm worried about throwing a guy like Ryan Brazier, who's a, what, 30-year-old rookie, right?
Something like that.
Into a playoff game at Yankee Stadium, Red Sox Yankees. He might not be ready for that spot. So I think what's interesting is, well, you do have to balance. You do have to make sure you have the best arms available. The best arms available seem to be the younger, less experienced guys. I want to make sure that there's at least one veteran coming out of that bullpen that can handle the spot, that's been in that kind of spot before.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. And for the Red Sox to have the success that they should in the playoffs, you're going to need your starters to go seven innings routinely. And the problem is, during the playoffs, that's when starters are on a shorter leash. They get runners in first and second. You're in the fifth or sixth inning. Odds are you're going to be pulled from that game if the lead's on the line. They don't have the luxury of doing that this time around. And they don't have they just don't have a bullpen that can keep that lead. So, yeah, it's a huge issue. And I think it's going to come from the success is going to come from the guys who are going to be cut out of that starting rotation. You're going to see Brian Johnson. You're going to see Steven Wright. And you're going to see Nathan Eovaldi a lot out there on top of guys like Workman and Matt Barnes. Guys you won't be able to trust are, you said it, Joe Kelly and Drew Pomeranz. It's going to be the only reason I am interested in this last week of the season is to see how Cora does mess with this bullpen and to get an idea of who he's going to go to in those big moments come playoff time. I still don't know. I think there's a couple guys who have looked good, but you need more than one or two guys to have a successful postseason run.
And this is where I will bring it up again. David Price. He has been most useful to the Red Sox coming out of the bullpen down the stretch last year, and he pitched well in the playoffs, although they lost. Right now, the Red Sox are setting him up to start game one of the ALDS. Now, look, I'd rather him start game one than start in Yankee Stadium. I'd rather him start game one than game three or four. I'm not going to go against that. But I would just Sale, Price, Kimbrel. You do that, you win game one, you're in much, much better shape. And then guess what? If you need David Price, perhaps in game five, you can pitch Kimbrel again in game four and pitch David Price in game five. I'd rather see him start game two. I'd really rather see him in the bullpen than have him start game one. Because guess what? If he implodes, then all the Yankees have to do, all they have to do is win two at home and they win the series. You give away home field advantage. So I know I just kind of changed the subject there. My bad on that. But now's when Alex Cora has been fun this year, right? It's been fun to watch him grow as a manager. He's been entertaining. For the most part, he's made the right decisions. There were some growing pains, but now's the time where we get to really dig in and look at his decisions and see exactly what he's thinking. And to me, David Price in game one would be a mistake.
Oh, absolutely. He's a game two starter, textbook game two starter. You need Sale if it comes down to it later in that series. Price isn't the guy. I'd rather Price come out of the bullpen the entire playoffs and pitch game one, honestly. And it's a tough spot because he can't pitch game three. The reality is he is your second best starter right now. He's pitched very well with the exception of his last start against the Yankees. We'll see if we can trust him. We saw him personally live ALDS last season come out of the bullpen. And
he was great.
He pitched really well. Probably the best we've ever seen him pitch, realistically, up until that point. I think he's topped that this season. But he can't be your number one starter. Number two starter, and then you got to go Porcello game three, who I have much more confidence in, even though I don't have a lot of confidence in him in the first place. And I'd be shocked if Cora doesn't go that route. The question is, are you going to go Erod with that fourth game? I think he's your fourth starter. And another concern of mine is if Sale loses that first game, I know it's cliche to say, but that is a must win. If he loses that first game, I don't trust David Price to come out there and
I would say whatever game, even if it's game two, whatever game Sale pitches is a must win.
Oh, yeah. Well, but if it's game one and Sale pitches and then game two, you have Price with a 1-0 right. deficit, you're down 2-0 potentially heading into that game three at Yankee Stadium. And there you go. The best team, the quote-unquote best regular season team in Red Sox history gets swept in the ALDS by the New York Yankees.
Isn't it kind of scary that that's a real possibility?
It's an absolutely real possibility. I'm still betting on the Red Sox. I think that the Yankees are a team that has a lot of holes, and they just don't seem as mentally put together, as well put together as the Red Sox. But to say it's not a possibility, it's baseball. And the Yankees have a really good team, so it's definitely a possibility.
And again, to go back to it, even more reason I would go away from price one and sale two is if you start price game one, let's say you go with the three starters, whether the third is Porcello and Erod, let's say you need to win game four. If Chris Sale started game two, he's not pitching game four. You're looking at David Price in a possible elimination game at Yankee Stadium in game four. You wouldn't have Sale till game five. And I know he said Sale's the number one starter, but you look at the home and road split since Fortnite issues for David Price. His ERA everywhere but Yankee Stadium is right around 2. His ERA at Yankee Stadium is over 12. So if you go Sale game one, Price game two, that gives you, if you need that quick turnaround, Sale game four, Price game five, which puts David Price back at Fenway. So I think Chris Sale has to start game one. I think they are setting themselves up for a major issue if Price starts game one, because if he implodes, like you said, the series is probably over, because even if Chris Sale does go out and win game two, which of course would be a must win, you need two wins at Yankee Stadium from the combination of Porcello, Erod, and Price. And you're not getting two wins from those three at Yankee Stadium. It's just not going to happen. You're not going to get that series back to Fenway. So you need Chris Sale to start game one, not just because that's a must win, but because game four could be a must win as well. And I'm sure as hell not putting David Price on the mound in an elimination game at Yankee Stadium. Now, before we wrap this all up, there is a caveat we should put on all of this, Mr. Lebowitz. That being that the Yankees are, and they've clinched the playoffs. They have clinched the playoffs, but they're only a game and a half up on the red hot Oakland A's. So there is a chance the Yankees have to go cross country. What the first week of October could look like for them is Boston, because they finished this season at Fenway. Boston on Sunday, go out to Oakland on Tuesday for the wild card game, and then be back in Boston on Thursday to start the ALDS on Friday. So how focused are you on that battle? How important is it for the Yankees to play that wild card game at home?
Oh, I mean, it's huge. That cross country trip, it takes a lot out of these players, especially when it's just one game. And especially when in the back of the mind, you know, we're going to have to go right back to the East Coast directly after this. It's tough. And I think they have that mindset. The problem is I don't trust a guy like Aaron Boone to really be a key motivator for that Yankees team. I think he's a bit of a squid. Just a little bit. So, yeah, it's massive. It's the biggest thing for that team right now. It's priority number one. And if you're the Yankees, I think even though this isn't necessarily true, your mindset should be home field advantage for the wild card or bust. Because you go to Oakland, and this is where this kind of structure, this format is flawed. You're going to be going cross country, the jet lag, all that jazz. For one game to decide your entire season.
Well, you know what? Then win the division. I have no problem with this format. It means the division matters, which I like. The division member used to not matter.
Well, I think I like the three-game series, and I think the home field advantage should go to whoever the top seed is.
Fair.
But three-game series, best two out of three, and then move on. If you have to cut out two games of the regular season, do it. I don't care. But three-game series seems like the way to go for that. But, this is absolutely huge for the Yankees. And I don't know, who would they go with on that that one game? Would it be Tanaka?
I think if it's in Yankee Stadium, you pitch Tanaka. He's struggled on the road. So I think if it's in Oakland, it's Severino, who's been hit and miss. So, there's a lot at stake there. And to bring it back to the Red Sox, if it's Oakland – all that rotation stuff goes out the window, because I know the Red Sox struggled with Oakland early in the year, but one Sean Manaea, I believe, is hurt. So that won't be an issue. You can start David Price in game one of that series because he can pitch in Oakland. I don't care if he pitches in Oakland. that whole conversation really just applies to if it's the Yankees. So,
yeah, is it?
But I think it will be, even if it's in Oakland, I think it will be the Yankees. I just think, honestly, Boone's job, maybe not immediately, but Boone's job could be on the line. And if they – to have the team he had, to have the roster he had, the way things went with the Red Sox this season, if they lose that game and then he gets out to a slow start next year, that could be it for him. So I think the Yankees are up for that game regardless of where it is.
Yeah, and maybe if they do get rid of Aaron Boone, they can get a guy like Joe Girardi. But one point you did
maybe.
Make that
– You think so.
One point that you did make that is going – that isn't talked about enough – is in relation to Oakland being a better matchup. It's not necessarily a better matchup strategically wise in regard to their lineup or their bullpen or their starting rotation. It's a better matchup because of the spectacle. Otakko Coliseum, if they even call it that anymore, is the smallest ballpark outside of Fenway Park. And it's obviously a crap market, Oakland. So from David Price's perspective, I'd rather see him out on the mound against a team like that.
Right.
Even though the Sox would probably avoid that regardless. I'd rather see him out there against a team like that than at Yankee Stadium in front of, 45,000 fans.
From Price's point of view, yes. I will say, though, I'm rooting for Red Sox-Yankee series because this season's been – there's been too much buildup to face Oakland and Houston. Like, who the hell cares?
Houston's good. Don't undersell them.
Give me Red Sox-Yankees. Give me Red Sox-Yankees all day. I want that spectacle. I want that series. I want those emotions. I want that intensity. As a fan, give that to me. And maybe I wouldn't be saying that if I thought the Yankees could beat the Red Sox, but
I can get behind that.
We'll see. All right, we went way over on this one, so we'll go a little rapid fire on the next one. We're recording on Sunday, so there's a lot happening today that unfortunately won't get to touch on, but we'll briefly run through it. Keep it here. This is Calling It, powered by CLNS.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Calling It, a Sunday morning edition of the program. Alex Barth and Alex Lebowitz with you because it is Sunday morning. It's a great sports Sunday as well. There's a lot going on this Sunday that, this show would be old if we touched on it specifically. So we have, of course, the Patriots and the Lions and just a whole slate of Sunday NFL games. Tiger Woods is charging up the leaderboards at the Tour Championship. So I will start with the Patriots. We didn't get a chance to talk about last week's game against the Jaguars. So, Lebowitz, if you want to go first, that seems like a year ago now with everything that happened this week with the team, but I'll let you go first on that. Just your thoughts from last week.
Yeah, Blake Bortles just looked unbelievable. I don't think you can undersell the impact that losing guys like Flowers and Patrick Chung will have on a team, especially in the first half. They just look bad. The reality is the Patriots have a game like this once every season, and usually happens between weeks 1 and 4. So I'm not going to overreact to it. I think they're going to come out tonight and probably have a decent game against the Lions, especially given that the Lions are kind of trash. But not overly concerned. I think the Patriots usually tend to bounce back from games like that.
Yeah, that had all the makings of the classic Patriots early season blowout. You had the crappy quarterback playing out of his mind. Shout out Alex Smith. Just a poor game plan going in, not well coached, a bunch of injuries. It was the classic Trent Dilfer, they're not that good anymore game.
Max Kellerman.
There's reason to be concerned, absolutely, but I don't think that, that's the end of the season. There's things they need to fix. It's not, I feel like everybody after those games, there's two groups of people after a game like that in terms of Patriots fans. There's, oh my God, the world is ending. The dynasty's over. They got blown out by a team like the Jaguars. What are we going to do? And then there's the people that are, everything's fine. This happens to them once a year. There's no need to worry. Everything will be okay. And we had this conversation last year after the Chiefs game. It's the same thing. I just feel like there's nobody in that middle group where I am, which is, yeah, there's things that need to get fixed. They're not easy fixes, but they tend to fix them. So I'm not concerned. I'm a little worried. I want to see them get fixed what they need to fix, but I do trust that they will fix that. So,
my whole logic with it is until the Patriots start consistently playing bad, I'm not gonna pick against them. They consistently prove those people in the former group you were talking about wrong, and the people in the latter who are like they're fine, they'll be fine. Yeah, a lot of those people are simply homers, but guess what? They're on the right side of the argument more than not.
They're right. So the people on one side are right for the wrong reasons. The people on the other side are wrong for the right reasons.
Yeah, sure. But
didn't follow any of that, did you?
No. I know exactly what you mean. With exceptions. I think there are people who like to hate on the Patriots that work at 98.5. And there are people that like to
Careful there.
No, I'm just joking. They know they do it. They're negative. Felger and Matt is my favorite show in Boston, so I'm just picking.
Adam Jones, big friend of our program. So.
And Adam Jones, obviously. Adam Jones is the vulture, but he owns it, to his credit. Yeah, but I'm not overly concerned. I think, you know, come December, they're going to solidify themselves as probably the Super Bowl favorites. And that's also depends on where the Kansas City Chiefs go from here, because they worry me as well.
There's no tape on him. Let's wait till there's tape on him and teams can actually game plan for him. Then we'll see.
That's true.
And we'll they come to Gillette in a couple weeks. So I want to actually revisit that and remind me, because if Mahomes is still doing this at that point, I think that's late October. It's a different conversation.
For sure.
But we talked. So the Patriots had needs they needed to address from that game. One of them was they were unable to get Rob Gronkowski open. There was zero threat on the outside that the Jaguars had to respect. So they go out and they trade for Josh Gordon. And this is something me included, myself included, a lot of people around New England have kind of dreamed about. It's been a fantasy to have a guy like this on this team. Impact-wise, playmaker-wise, they haven't had a receiver like this since Randy Moss. Not that Gordon is as good as Moss, but I think he's the best we've seen since. And you know how high I am on Brandon Cooks. Gordon, much better player when he's on. And I'm expecting big things from him. This is not like we've seen so many times this year with Jordan Matthews, with Kenny Britt, with Eric Decker. This is not, you know, a 2-week tryout. He's going to get cut sort of deal. Josh Gordon, if all works out, is going to be a factor. They want him to be a factor. They want him to be a difference. Now it's going to take time. He has to learn the playbook. He has to get on the same page as Tom Brady. I'm not saying he's going out, you know, 8 catches, buck 50, 2 touchdowns against Detroit. But at the same time, what makes this exciting is he could do that. Even with, let's say they gave him 20% of the playbook this week. Even with 20% of the playbook, he could do that, which is why this is so exciting. Because outside of Gronkowski, the Patriots don't have that game breaker, and they can't double cover. No defense can double cover both those guys. One of those guys is going to be getting single coverage, which is a scary, scary thought. At the very least, you get for a couple of weeks Gordon distracting defenses from the other weapons the Patriots have, if not just Gronkowski, James White, Edelman when he comes back, Philip Dorsett. I love this move. Very low risk, very high reward.
Oh, yeah, you said it. Low risk, high reward, fifth round pick, and it might not even be that if it doesn't pan out. Hopefully that's
where they ended up. They took the conditions off. So it was a fifth round pick for Josh Gordon and a seventh. But the thing about Bill Belichick is they actually figured this out. The math people down there at Gillette, you have roughly the same percent chance of hitting on a fifth round pick than a seventh round pick in the NFL draft. And the seventh round pick is going to cost you a lot less. So Bill Belichick has no interest in fifth round picks. He look at the history. He generally trades them away because he can hit on a seventh almost just as well and pay less.
He hits on undrafted guys just as often as fifth round picks. Yeah, this is a great deal for the Patriots. I'm really hoping it works out. The question with Josh Gordon obviously isn't a talent. He has a talent, and he's in a place where they're a legitimate contender. It's not the Cleveland Browns. They're not going 1-15, 0-16. They're not going to go 7-9 this season. He's going to win. So will that be enough to keep him focused and keep him a part of the game plan? That question's yet to be answered. I'm hoping that it is, because he's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And I agree with you. He is the most talented wide receiver the Patriots have acquired since Randy Moss, Brandon Cooks included. Another thing is, I think if any team can handle a personality like Josh Gordon, who has the troubles he has, I think it is New England. And that's a little cliche to say, but
Ask Randy Moss, Rodney Harrison, ask Martellus Bennett. Ask Martellus Bennett, exactly. Like been there, done that for Bill. Not that all the problems are the same. Obviously, they're all unique, and Gordon has some mental issues as well as just the off-the-field stuff. But Belichick has generally clicked with those guys, and if he can't personally do it, he'll find somebody else on the team to do it. Remember Michael Floyd living with Jacoby Brissett, for instance.
I think it says a lot that he took this risk on a guy like Josh Gordon and didn't take it on a guy like Dez Bryant. And Josh Gordon might be more talented than someone like Dez Bryant.
Way more talented.
But still, there is, some people consider Gordon to have more baggage, which I think that's debatable. But if Belichick's willing to take a risk on this guy, given how he looks at locker room chemistry, I think that's telling on the reputation that Gordon has from a personality standpoint. Obviously, he needs to not smoke pot, and that's his primary issue. But in regard to being a good teammate, I haven't heard any you know, rumors that he is not a good teammate. I think it's just simply he likes weed a little bit too much, and he needs to learn how to stay away from it. And if he does that, this wide receiving core, these targets for Brady go from subpar to really good. I'm talking Gronk, Edelman, Gordon, and I think a guy who might emerge as a real stud this season, Sony Michel, coming out of the backfield, which would be more than enough for this team to excel this season.
All right, so that's all the Patriots talk. Obviously, you know, we're doing this hours before the Detroit game, so we'll recap that. We'll hopefully have a show during the week this week. I think it will get a little easier, Lebowitz, to plan the stuff now that you know, the first couple weeks of September are always a little nuts, but I do want to, before we wrap the segment up, another thing that's happening today, and we will absolutely talk about this more next week if it happens, but Tiger Woods is – let me pull it up here real quick because I don't have the latest number. Tiger Woods is 3 strokes up at the Tour Championship, and he is being chased by the likes of Rory, who's right behind him at 3 strokes back. Justin Rose is in the conversation. John Rahm, Paul Casey. I mean, this is going to be a hell of a finish today. The Tour Championship, like, leave it. It doesn't kind of make sense the way that this whole PGA season has gone, that it's one of the last events that Tiger would potentially win, right? It's not a major. Obviously, he'd want it to be a major, but he kept us hanging on until the last second, which in itself is quintessential Tiger.
Oh, it's great. It's awesome. And it's golf porn for those Tiger fans out there. I was watching the first round. I was watching the front nine yesterday, and it was – he was putting on a clinic.
He's an animal.
It looked like he was in his prime, just hitting every shot. And there were a lot of guys who were doing very well yesterday as well. But it's awesome to see. It's great for golf, and it's consistent at this point. He's done it for an entire summer. He's been a top-tier golfer on the PGA Tour, which we haven't been able to say for quite some time. It's an exciting time for golf to have him back, and hopefully it continues. We talked about it a month or two ago. If he doesn't win a major next year, then maybe the window's shut. I don't know. Maybe that's right, but he's been consistent. And
Vegas updated their odds yesterday. He's now the favorite to win the 2019 Masters.
He's the favorite? Oh, wow. So that would be amazing. That would be amazing. It's great to see. And I'm not someone who's been a massive golf fan my entire life, but with Tiger in the mix, I'm definitely paying a lot closer attention to it.
And it's not a major, but him playing this well also comes at the perfect time because he will be on the Ryder Cup roster, which is next weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And, oh, man, I am hot and bothered about the Ryder Cup this year. That is going to be out. Even if it's at 4 a.m, I will be up.
Who's the captain?
Who is the captain?
Not Mickelson.
No. Hear me typing in the background. I can say I'm all excited for it. Jim Furyk. That's right.
Jim Furyk. Okay, there you go.
Is the Team US Funky captain. Furyk. So it's going to be it's going to be quite the field. That way it's Furyk, Koepka, Johnson, Thomas, Reed, Watson, Spieth, Fowler, Webb Simpson, my boy Bryson DeChambeau, Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, and Tony Finau was the last qualifier. So we'll talk Ryder Cup more on Wednesday when we have the preview, but Tiger getting hot at just the right time. Speaking of getting hot, I don't know if that's an okay teaser for this, but some energy issues north of Boston this week. Our own Alex Lebowitz is an Andover native, so I want to hear his side of the story on this. We'll have that right after this. Don't go anywhere. It's going to be a good one. Calling It, powered by CLNS, continues.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Calling It, Alex Barth and Alex Lebowitz. We're a little late on this story. This was like a week and a half ago now, but Thursday at around 4 o'clock, there was a string of fires north Andover, Lawrence, Andover. It's an area just north of Boston, about, I don't know, 45 minutes north. And
30.
Ended up being 30 minutes. Ended up being due to some issues with the gas company, but Alex Lebowitz is from Andover, had to leave his house for a bit because of that, and ended up making national news. It's an ongoing situation. The gas issue is out in the fact that I don't think there's any more risks for these gas explosions or anything. But first of all, Lebowitz, glad to hear that your house is fine, your family's okay. But kind of take me through what that day was like for you.
Yeah, it was tough. I was in my room. I was playing a little Xbox. I brought the Xbox 360 back. And, yeah, I get a call from my dad. He asked me, hey, can you go outside and turn the gas off? Apparently, there are evacuations in Andover, North Andover, and Lawrence because there have been a string of fires and explosions. We got a call from the town, all that jazz. I didn't know how to do it. My dad had to come home and do it. But after that, we got the dogs out, put the cat in the crate, and hung out in my backyard for about 2-3 hours. Over that course of time, I was on my phone kind of surveying what had happened. One of the things that happened, obviously, there was an explosion. One person died. There were several others injured and a lot of people who were just displaced. And still were, you know, a week and a half removed. No gas in 1,400 homes. And those 1,400 homes may not have gas from what I'm hearing for the next 9 to 12 months.
Wow.
And the company that's being blamed for all this is Columbia Gas, which was doing renovations in the area, literally down the street from my house. And what do you know, on that street, there were fires. Fortunately, my direct neighborhood was not impacted in any significant way from this. We're fine. We slept at our house the night of. Other people did not have that luxury. So it's a really tough situation that people are still reeling from. And hopefully these gas lines, 48 miles worth of gas lines, will be renovated sooner than they expect.
What was it like those 2 to 3 hours sitting in your backyard, not knowing if you're just going to see your house explode? Like, I'd imagine that was a very intense time.
Yeah, I wasn't all that concerned over that. I was outside for precautionary reasons. My dad is a mechanical contractor, plumber. He does heating systems, all that stuff, and he said there was nothing to worry about. He was going around turning gas off in the neighborhood and at other people's houses that he knows. So he was out and about. He came back and said, you guys can go back in the house. Nothing's wrong. The gas is off and our neighborhood's not affected. He ended up being right. So it wasn't all that nerve-wracking. I was nervous mainly just because I knew that there would be a major impact from this in regard to potential loss of life and just people's possessions being destroyed. Fortunately, maybe there's one death, which was a lot less than I anticipated there being.
Right. It sounded from the initial reports that it was going to be at least in the double digits. So it's unfortunate that one person was lost, but, you know, credit to all the first responders and everybody who, you know, it could have been a lot worse without them.
Yeah. And, you talk about first responders. I go to work in the morning. If, you know, I'm out the door by 5 o'clock, 4:55, and I'm driving to work and down the street, Boston Police, Concord Police, Somerville Police. There were people and Londonderry Fire Department, all these different emergency response crews from towns in the surrounding areas came in to assist with the fires and kind of to also make to survey the neighborhood because looting was a big possibility with people evacuating their homes. So you have to give a shout out to all the first responders, the people who came out. And I know I'm also interested to see the fallout in regard to Columbia Gas in relation to this. Will they be sued into bankruptcy?
So I want to get into this in a minute, but one more thing for you. How was your show the next morning? Because for those who don't know, does the morning show.
Yeah.
Ian Lowell, how was the show the next morning?
It was obviously the entire 4 hours, not a minute out was spent discussing anything else. It was massive news. You talk about it making national news. This made international news. I saw it covered in China. I saw it covered in Europe. This was a big, big story throughout the area. And so, yeah, we discussed it the entire morning. And we took calls from people who were affected. And we talked to, you know, the mayor, Dan Rivera, Mayor Lawrence, town managers in the surrounding areas to get an idea of what happened, fire chiefs and what have you. So it was a lot of just gathering information, trying to put the pieces together. It was an intense show, and it was something that, you know, can't take your mind off of it, but it was good to vent and kind of get a pulse of what the feeling was around the area.
Okay, so now then, we've got about 4 or 5 minutes left in the segment. If you need all of it, take it. your thoughts, if you have anything to say to Columbia Gas.
You know, this is just a horrible situation, and I'm curious to see what the investigation finds. If there was one person who is to blame, or if this is a systematic issue which started this all, I don't know. It's been awful. And another awful part of it was Columbia was not responsive that first 24 hours, that first 12 hours of this whole incident. We were hearing from town officials. We were hearing from Governor Charlie Baker. We didn't really hear much from Columbia Gas. And since then, they've donated $10 million to a relief fund, which is just going to be pennies compared to what they're going to have to pay. They've opened up possession claims, locations, all that stuff. But yeah, it's horrible. And they're understaffed, and they have to continue working on it because there's not enough people in the area to replace them. Governor Baker has been very vocal. Dan Rivera has been very vocal in regard to condemning Columbia Gas for their handling of this. But they have no choice but to continue using them. Imagine being in that conundrum. So I'm driving down the street yesterday, and the same spot where I've been seeing gas work done the past 3 weeks, Columbia Gas is out there again. So it's a little nerve-wracking to know that a company that obviously did not take the proper procedures, not use the proper protocols last week, they're still out there and they're still conducting their gas work. Hopefully nothing bad happens again. But this also could be, in all fairness, this could be a result of gas lines that went untreated for a number of years. So long story short, Columbia Gas, definitely a lot left to desire, but this also could be the fault of someone else. I want to wait for an investigation personally.
And this just coming out, I mean, right before we hopped on, within the last hour, Columbia Gas agreed to compensate its customers for all losses related to the gas explosions. But again, I mean, they're in for a tough road ahead. I find it hard to believe that, you know, I think – I forget if you used the term on air or off air, sued into bankruptcy.
Yeah.
I'd imagine that there's at least one class action lawsuit coming, and just, you know – You're a gas company. My thought when I heard – and they said – I heard the president of Columbia Gas say that they didn't shut off the gas initially because they didn't know what they were dealing with. When they got the reports of the house fires and the homes exploding, before they knew what it was, they didn't shut the gas off initially because they didn't know that the issue was related to them. But I don't know that much about how gas works and all that infrastructure.
It causes fires.
Tells me that, right, if there's a bunch of houses in an area catching on fire – even if it's not my fault, I'm probably going to shut the gas off.
Just to play it safe, yeah.
Because science. So,
and that's going to be interesting. Maybe that caused more injury. The killer is not only do you have these houses that are destroyed, these people's possessions destroyed. You in downtown Andover still doesn't have gas. There are an abundance of restaurants that are down there. And these insurance companies, they'll give you money to last and pay off your rent. Your employees aren't making money during this. So there's people who have loss of income from this. So you mentioned that with the fact that there's loss of revenue from these businesses, loss of life, injury, loss of possessions. You're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars that's going to have to be spent by Columbia in lawsuits and whatnot. This is a $10 billion corporation. Will that be enough to sue it into bankruptcy? Because that $10 billion is assets on top of everything. I don't know. But they'll probably lose contracts due to this whole thing. And I hope that other companies learn from their mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, the fallout, this is the kind of story that, you know, is going to probably hang on for a couple of years. So we'll see as it goes down the road. Thanks for kind of indulging us there. We hope you enjoyed that segment. I thought, you know, Leibowitz was the perfect person to talk about that. And it really was just from a news point of view too, a fascinating story to follow. We will be back next week, probably Wednesday. We'll talk off the air, but probably Wednesday at some point next week. Anyway, recapping the Patriots game, kind of what we talked about in that second segment. We'll talk Patriots. We'll talk Tiger. We'll have a better idea what the Red Sox are doing. So make sure you're following us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast for that. You can check us out online on CLNS Media's website, clnsmedia.com. Any lasting words here, Leibowitz? Any words you want to leave him with?
Nope. Nothing to do.
All right. We're all talked out, I guess. First time for everything. We will talk to you next week then. For Alex Leibowitz, I'm Alex Barr. Thanks for listening. Bye.